Thank you, as always, to Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon and Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa for their presenting sponsorship of the Ira Kaufman Podcast. The red carpet sales event continues at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa. Walk the red carpet for huge savings from General Manager Brian Danahy. Get a 2018 XT5 for only $359 a month, zero down, plus save up to $16,000 off all remaining 2017s or 0% financing for up to 72 months. Only at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher. Click EdMorrisCadillacTampa.com and, of course, see the dealer for all the details. And in Brandon, our friends at Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, you can save now on a luxurious Cadillac and get more peace of mind with their like-new certified pre-owned Cadillacs. All certified pre-owned Cadillacs are inspected, reconditioned, and warrantied. Right now, get special financing and pay thousands less than new car prices. Visit EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com. And, of course, there are fantastic lease offers right there at Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon on Causeway Boulevard. Thank you again, Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Happy Tuesday. It's the Ira Kaufman Podcast starring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper is here. It is February 27th, 2 days left, Ira, in this great month, and we are just 15 days from the free agency dinner bell ringing, the combines this week. It is all going nonstop, and we love it. That's why we're here. We love football, Ira, but of course, the people are tuning in because they love you. So how are you, Ira?
I'm doing well, and I just want to remind our listeners that as they are accessing this podcast, Mr. DeCamper is on his way to the great city of Indianapolis, where he proudly says it's going to be 48 degrees. He's very happy about that. I can see him hitting all the hot spots, maybe even going to that club that NFL personnel are used to hanging out and been known as a pickup place, and DeCamper will be on the scene. Reporting, not participating, reporting. But we're very glad to have Lee for this podcast, our second podcast this week. Steve, it'll be just you and I. And by then, we'll have some quotes from Messrs. Light and Cutter, we believe. So we'll set the stage today for Indy.
I was referring to St. Elmo as a pickup place. That's the first time I've heard that.
I don't know about St. Elmo's, but there's a club, Lee, and I'll tell you off air.
Yeah, you mentioned that before, Ira, and you can give some details off the air. That's fine. Lee can partake as well. I mean, he's not tied down by it.
Been there, done that.
All right, so Sage, look, we heard about the great offers at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. The month is over tomorrow, so everybody get to their websites, as you heard, EdMorrisCadillacTampa.com. EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com. Ira, I'd like to confirm to everybody, now the official location will be revealed on the Commish's Bucks Uncensored podcast Wednesday, but you are going to be there at the big draft party opening night, and so Justin's already announced that. First night of the draft, Sage in the house. Let me say, Ira, I'm sure that you won't pay for a thing that night, and you might even walk away with a few bucks.
Now, Lee's not going to be there. Lee likes to go to one buck place and keep an eye on buck personnel and make sure things don't get out of hand in the media room.
But I'm
telling Lee DeCamper right now, Steve, and I'm sure you'll back me up. He missed one hell of a party last year. Rock Riley was in the house. People were getting buck haircuts. There was a lot of chanting going on. Of course, a lot of drinking. Port Richie Lou was carrying on.
Port Richie Lou.
You know, and we had the Panama man. He certainly was front and center.
Javier,
and he said he's coming. Steve, I don't know how to get a top it, but you know the commish. He's always got new frills coming up, and I don't have any doubts that he's going to put on a hell of a show.
Was Outlaw there?
Oh, of course.
Outlaw.
Yeah.
He's one of the...
Oh, of course. Going to be in a different venue.
Venue, and while I'm not at liberty to reveal it yet, it comes out tomorrow.
Don't
sell Lee short. The venue is within striking distance of $1, so the party's going to start very early. Lee could easily come for dinner and head over and some merriment and head over to $1.
Merriment.
The Bucks aren't going to be picking until at least 9 o'clock.
You know, Steve, when I think about that party, one of the things that strikes me, and I'll tell Lee this story, is when we walked in, I was barraged. I had my hat down. I didn't think anybody was going to recognize me. Well,
you?
200 people show up at the door. Hey, Kaufman, come on in, Sage. And they're all in on Dalvin Cook. You know, it's 7 o'clock at night, and they're all in on Dalvin Cook. You know, we're going to get this guy. He's going to be tremendous. We're going to have a running game to go with Jameis Winston. Now,
wouldn't that have been nice?
Isbitz was near me, and I said immediately, don't be shocked. If O.J. Howard's there, they're going to take O.J. Howard. Well, flash forward 2 hours later, after a couple of beers, Lee, just a few, and now everybody's watching ESPN, and it's pick 19. And with the 19th pick, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers select tight end O.J. Howard from Alabama. And then all of a sudden I look and 260 Buck fans are bowing down in my direction. You are the man, Kaufman. You are the man. What they didn't know is Isbitz and I had some insider information.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, first I survived the car trip. That's number one.
In Arizona?
To that party in Arizona. And so we were not shocked, but Buck fans were not thinking about O.J. Howard when that party started. Mm-hmm. They were not. And frankly, Steve, in retrospect, I think we got to say the Bucks were shocked that he was there at 19. They didn't expect him to be there.
Well, all right, I got to ask you something real quick.
Yes, sir.
I know you always bring up about Steve's driving and how you
always, always. I'm never going to get off.
You were traumatized. Have you sought counseling yet for this? I mean, do you have PSDT?
Well, I'm going to say this. When it comes time to renew his license, if they ever put in a law where you have to take the driver's test again, he's in a lot of trouble.
Uh-oh.
He's in a lot of trouble. He may go to a Schwinn bicycle at that point.
Well, I thought maybe a Schwinn bicycle.
But, you know, he survived all these years, so maybe it's me. Maybe I've overreacted.
Well, I know at your tennis, club, you probably run into some people that, you know, are professionals in that area, and I thought maybe you sought counsel.
Steve, maybe I'm overdoing it a little bit because you got me where I needed to be in Arizona, Steve. You did.
All right, Aaron, look, all I know is that this draft party story, it becomes a fishtail. It keeps growing and growing. 240 people bowing down to you.
He's like a sheik.
And let's face it, Ira, come on. The first thing you said when you walked in the door and people greeted you was, who's buying me a plate of wings? Come on, step it up. That's
well,
what you said.
And do they have a beet salad?
Yeah. You know, well, here's one for you. You're talking about you were surprised that people recognize you. I'm much, much, much less, I don't know, visible is the right word, recognized than you. And these people are friends of ours. I'll go ahead and say their name. Bricado's Sandwich Shop. I went there Saturday. I was in the neighborhood. I'm in line to get a sandwich. And there's this guy behind the counter just hollering and screaming. I'm like, what's going on here? He goes, hollering, huh? And finally, you know, guy's looking at me. He's yelling at me. I mean, on top of his lungs, yelling. And I kind of, you know, put my palm in my chest like, you talking to me? Yeah, yeah, Joe Ba, Joe Ba, Joe Ba. And he kept saying Joe Ba. And I'm like, oh, he's saying Joe Bucks. Okay.
Steve, it's still, and I'm sure it happens to you in your palatial.
Don't be so sure.
In your palatial Pinellas County neighborhood. But people know Joe Bucks fan. People from all over, Steve. It's amazing. I remember Roy one time talked about a trip he took with his wife, and I think it was on the Nile River. I think it was in Egypt.
Roy Cummings.
Some guy goes, Roy Cummings, Tampa Tribune.
Is that serious?
Yeah, I believe that's a serious story. Now, I'm going to try it on the edge of a volcano this summer, but we'll see, Steven.
Edge of a volcano, where are you going?
I was going to climb Mount Everest and be halfway up and be like, nobody recognized me yet. What's going on here? This place sucks. All right, let's get to the Buccaneers, Ira. We could sit here and be ridiculous all day. It's fun.
2 weeks from free agency, Steven.
15 days, pal. But first, however, scheduled on Wednesday, Dirk Koetter and Jason Light, they are going to be speaking, meaning that they will have a news conference at the NFL Scouting Combine.
And Kemper will ask the tough questions.
National media is there. Really just a few local media, including Lee's going to be there. And you want to hear some things from these guys, and you laid it out in your column that you expect them to say some stuff very powerful. You put words in their mouth. I can only just smell the smoke coming out of their ears reading this at one buck.
Some were half joking, but some were very serious.
When they're thinking, hey, Kaufman's telling me what to say now.
But do you remember the very first one?
What's important was that you said this is what fans need to hear.
Yes.
So, you know, what's your most important ones? The one or two in that mix?
Well, Lee, you haven't read the column yet probably, but the very first one, and this one's not half joking, this one is serious, is, and I alternated between things I want to hear from Jason Light and things Buck fans need to hear from Dirk Koetter. The very first thing, which was on Light's plate, hey, I'm not sure what's going to happen with this Jameis Winston Uber investigation, but I've been assured, without qualification, from league personnel that are in the know, that this thing's going to be wrapped up before the draft. Wrapped up before the draft. Now, do I expect Light to say that? No, I don't. But it sure would be nicely if he refers to the Uber investigation and says a little bit more than, we're powerless at one buck place. Nobody wants to hear that.
Shed some light. Well, even though that's true, they are powerless. But
Where's the pull of the Glazers? They got any pull, Lee? They've been here more than two decades.
I would say no. I would say no. And I'll tell you why I said no. I said this in a post a couple weeks ago with the Marty Herney thing, and I don't know how we discussed Marty Herney for the listeners. Marty Herney is the interim general manager with Carolina.
Some domestic violence
issues. The interim tag may be pulled out. Anyway, he's going through an ugly divorce, and she tried to get a restraint order. She's trying to get a restraint order against him. And all of a sudden, you know, when you see that, you immediately think domestic violence. It took, what, less than 3 weeks for the NFL to launch an investigation, fly people down to Carolina, interview multiple, this is the NFL quoting, not the Panthers. NFL said, we interviewed multiple people, including Mr. Herney. Wrapped up, done, case closed, he's clean.
And now he's not interim anymore. Now he's the full-time
GM.
Did they take the tag off?
Okay.
Yes, they did.
Well, just contrast that with Jameis. Back in November, they opened up an investigation. We learned through Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times 2 weeks ago, Jameis hasn't been interviewed. 2 weeks ago, I was up at the Minnesota Super Bowl. Ronald Darby, who claimed he was in the car and witnessed everything, I asked him, have you been interviewed by the NFL? No, I have not.
That tells us this probe has gone nowhere.
Not only does that tell us the probe has gone nowhere, that tells me that Jerry Richardson has pull with Goodell. And I've read stories in the past, when I say past, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, that him and Goodell are tight.
Jerry Richardson has pull with Goodell.
Jerry Richardson called Goodell, like, get this over with, and the Glazers don't have the pull.
When the NFL wants to approach an investigation with a sense of urgency, that's what happens.
When is the last time you heard anyone from the NFL Network, any national NFL beat guy, whether it be Peter King, whether it be Jason Lockett Ford, you fill in the blank. Anyone said, the Glazer family insisted Goodell do blah, blah, blah. You never, ever, ever, ever hear that. Ever.
You hope some things are going on behind the scenes, Steve, but we don't have any reason to believe that that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the Glazers are light or powerless at all. I just think they're weak and soft and disinterested in moving this thing forward.
To
the best of our knowledge, I'll tell you why. First of all, the Glazers, if they wanted to, they could launch their own investigation. They could, if they thought Jameis did some wrongdoing, they could suspend him for 2 games if they wanted to on their own, right? When Jameis was being drafted, we heard Jason Light had a blank check, and the organization issued a blank check to investigate every possible nuance, team of investigators looking into Jameis and all his stuff and his duties, and they interviewed 75 people here. There's nothing in the league, and I checked this out, nothing stopping the Glazers from doing their own investigation, proceeding on their own, and the NFL can play off that. So that could help either speed things up or slow things down. We don't know. Maybe there's, for some twisted reason, the Glazers used some pull and wanted to slow this thing down for some reason. I don't know. But we don't know that. We don't know if the Glazers said, hey, Roger, can you put this thing off? We want to get through X and Y on our business front, and we want things to simmer down and whatever. And we don't know that. So we just don't know. But I don't think they're powerless. They could always go public, which would be a huge deal because they don't do that.
One thing I haven't asked you guys, Lee, about this Uber investigation. It seems clear, and tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems clear that Winston did not inform the Bucks of this incident, and there was an incident because he was aware that his Uber account had been suspended. He was aware of that.
Yeah, obviously.
It wasn't a mystery. So it seems clear that he did not inform the Bucks of that in a prompt manner. He did not, from almost 2 years ago. And my question to both of you gentlemen, and I use that in quotes, the fact that Winston wasn't 100% transparent with his own franchise, does that tilt anything in your mind that, hey, he might have done something here?
Yeah, is that
a factor in your thinking?
Well, it's a fair point. Publicly, the Bucks said they didn't know. Privately, that could be a different animal. I'm going to touch on something that Steve touched upon. And basically, it relates to your question earlier. Like, are the Glazers powerless? I said yes. My answer is, don't confuse that with weak. Two different animals. Who are the two biggest heavy hitter owners in the NFL?
Kraft and Jones.
And what happened when Goodell went after their
nailed
players?
Nailed and nailed.
Thank you.
And it took a while.
But they nailed him. Goodell nailed him. And that, you know, there's no more heavy hitters than Kraft and Jones. And Jones went completely bananas. Kraft was upset, but he went about it the right way. You know,
he took the high road.
But Jones went nuts and tried to get Goodell thrown out of his office. The Glazers are not heavy hitters like Jones. And they're not heavy hitters like Kraft. Uh-oh, he's writing something down, so he's going to come.
Yeah.
So Steve's going to come after me for saying this. So if Jones and Kraft can't influence Goodell, Glazers aren't. I'm sorry. And that's not to say they're weak. It's just like they're powerless in the sense that if the heavy hitters can't influence Goodell, no one can.
Fair point. You give the Glazers a pass, Steven?
No.
It's
100% fair point. Don't get me wrong. But it leads to something bigger. As I'll ask you and Lee as well. All the owners put together, like the 30 owners, combine their power.
32.
No, combine 30 owners.
23. Right, oh, 30. Right,
let me finish. Combine 30 owners and their power and compare that to the power of Jones and Kraft. Who's more powerful, 31 owners and Kraft or 31 owners and Jones, if you put them on a scale? I'll say the 31 other owners collectively.
Yeah, because they're paying Goodell's salary.
Right. So my point is collectively, Jones is very powerful, but 31 other owners are more powerful than Jones.
Which has been proven because Goodell's still there.
Right. So here's the point. As powerful as Kraft and Jones are, they knew the rest of the league said, handle this fairly. That's your damn job, Roger. And none of this influence is going to cut it. Nobody cares about the Bucks, right?
Bingo.
The league cares about the Patriots. So you know they're the top dog. They care about the Cowboys, all the money and influence there. Nobody cares about the Bucks. So I don't see the Glazers. I think if they pushed it a little bit harder, they might get some results because there's no pushback. All right, you know what I mean?
Here's the bottom line with Goodell. Here's the bottom line. The Albert Breers of the world and Peter King and all the lefties and you know everybody ought to be paid $40,000 a year no matter what. You know why Goodell's employed? I'll tell you why he's employed. He makes some money. That's right. Why he's employed.
That's right.
You know, everybody screams, oh, Goodell's salary. Well, guess what? He wouldn't be making that money if he wasn't making the owner's money.
No question about it.
Bingo. And that's all you need to know. As no. Chris Russell would say, that's all you need to know.
Steve, maybe by the time we do our second podcast this week, you know, maybe with Lee's questions and with Cutter and Light and other NFL personnel around, we might have a little better understanding of where this thing stands.
Sure.
But I'm not that confident.
Hopefully.
That we will, Steve.
I'm not confident either. You know, and Jameis obviously hasn't wanted to discuss it or push it a little bit. You know, it appears that we know. So, but maybe.
Buck fans, Lee, that think that this is a trivial issue, it's not important.
No.
I think they're crazy.
Well,
I think they're crazy.
At the very least, look at the investment the Glazers are thinking about with Jameis. At the very least. And we're talking 2 years down the road. I mean, we're talking mega money. We're not talking about dinner at Schlotsky's.
Steve, if the findings are one-sided against Winston, conclusive against Winston, I've gone on this podcast I've said get rid of him.
Get rid of him, yeah. And I agree with you. I really do. It's not a happy thought. But if that's the case, then there's too many X's and not enough W's for me. So
I don't think that's going to be the case. Hopefully not.
I don't know. It's a bizarre situation only because it's still going on. You know, it's very, very odd. But we'll see. You know, we've learned some things behind the scenes that seem a little odd, but there's just not enough information.
All right, another All point right. I made, Steve.
In the column.
Another point, Lee, that I made from Cutter saying I don't apologize for being loyal to Doug Martin and playing him after his suspension's over. But, guys, I got to tell you, I stayed with him too long. Peyton Barber was more productive, and Peyton Barber deserves a place and a role in our backfield this fall. I can't say that he's going to be getting 20 carries a day, but I made a mistake. My loyalty to Doug Martin extended a little bit too far. I'd like to hear that, Lee. I don't think I will, but I'd like to hear it.
Take Cutter out for a couple beers. He might tell you that.
There you go.
But he's not going to say that in front of NFL media.
I wonder if he feels that way, though, in private.
If he doesn't, he needs to readjust himself. You know, and I always say this. If we can see it, if the guy in the stands can see it on the upper deck, if a guy sitting on his smelly, beer-stained 12-year-old lazy boy can see it on TV, why couldn't Cutter see it? But here's one. I can't remember. It's one of our readers. I can't remember if it was in one of the comments of our stories or if it was Twittered to us or not. Was Peyton Barber that good, or was Doug Martin just that bad that Peyton Barber looked like Gale Sayers, to use a term from Cutter?
Well, when the dust settled, Steve, he averaged 3.9. It's not anything to do cartwheels with, Peyton Barber, but it was a lot better than anybody else that toted the rock before him.
Of course it was worth cartwheels. What are you talking about? I did at least 8 myself.
Two things about Peyton Barber. The 3.7, I put the story up.
3.9.
3.9. Yeah. The Bucks had interest a couple years ago in Lamar Miller in case they didn't bring back Martin. And there was a short period of time where it didn't look like Martin was going to come back to the Bucks. He signed. So there was some doubt. At any rate, Lamar Miller went to Houston. There's a potential he might be a free agent this year, salary cap cut. Last year, his worst year of his career, 3.7. And we were talking about Barber 3.9. And here a guy is the Bucks almost had a couple years ago. And they were talking about the worst of his career, 3.7.
He's an average back, but we haven't had average around here.
Thank you.
Very often. For four out of the last 6 years, we ain't had average. So you guys are always talking about upgrades. Average would be an upgrade.
Of course, when you were quoting Cutter before, that was the tone of your column, what you want to hear them say. If you want to hear the rest of what Ira had, wants to hear from Light and Cutter, it's on JoeBucksFan.com.
Can
check
I say something about his column real quick?
Of course.
Just so people don't, I know you brought this up earlier. Leo, I know you haven't read this yet. And the reason why, not that I don't read your columns, I do, but your Monday columns, we generally record the podcast late Monday mornings.
And you're driving down.
I'm driving. Yeah, your schedule and my schedule conflict. You send the column Monday morning. I'm in the shower when he gets it. I'm behind the wheel driving to our place where we record, and Steve's already got it uploaded, so I rarely get to read it timely.
And Steve, I got one where Dirk Cutter says he's in constant contact with Miko Grimes. Constant contact.
Yeah, there's some fun ones in there. Fun ones in there. All right, Ira, look, you were talking about the running game, and let's turn that toward your heralded interview with DeMar Dotson on Thursday's podcast. Now, if you haven't listened yet, go listen. Excellent 20 minutes from Dotson there. Very candid, very, very straight about the state of the 2017-2018.
And more to come later this spring, right? More to come.
More to come. Two more big segments with Dotson. We're very good at Joe Bucks Fan and not shooting our load here in one shot. We got plenty from DeMar on a lot of subjects, so looking forward to sharing that. But so we didn't talk about what he had to say afterwards, and there were a lot of gems in there. And I know you wanted to talk about what he had to say about the offensive line. Dotson admitted that O-line coach George Warhop came up to each O-lineman individually and Dotson personally and said, look, you guys didn't do enough in the running game. No chance, not good enough, and this has got to be your focus. What do you make of that?
You know, Lee, it was my very first question for the Dotson interview. I said, how much responsibility do you guys take as a group for a lousy running game? And I said, for the past 2 years. I said 2 years. And Isbitz looked at me and said, Kaufman, you don't open up with a softball? You're asking about the running game? How are you, Dot? You're coming off, rehab?
I came here for
this? No, absolutely not. Our listeners need to go right to the nitty-gritty. Now, Lee, I mentioned the last 2 years. His answer was very directed about what Warhop said after this 2017 season. And Lee, he also said that when these guys reconvene, which I believe will be in April,
as a group,
and they walk into that offensive line meeting room, Warhop is going to show them every single running play from last year. That is 380 running plays. And Steve, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say 300 of them are going to be lousy. And they're going to have to explain it, and he's going to break it down and say, Donovan, you didn't do this. Marpet, you missed that block. What are you doing, Sweezy? You got manhandled. And if I'm Warhop, I'm not pulling any punches because jobs are on the line. And guess what, Warhop? It includes your job.
So, all kinds of jobs
are
on the line.
So Dotson has openly acknowledged, we didn't get the job done. Take that, Mr. Doug Martin over there at DeKemper. There's more to it than Doug Martin.
Maybe I'm out in the wilderness by myself. But you know what? That offense hummed in the last month when they had three starters down. If they had three starters down and they played better with Martin benched, I don't know. My math says it's Martin. And for the Doug Martin truthers, Scott Kaxmir.
You're so far out in the wilderness, you're lucky hunters aren't taking pot shots at you. You know, taking you for a turkey.
Yeah, I watched the Denver Broncos last year.
That's why
year.
He's wearing a yellow brand yeah. shirt.
I watched the Broncos last year. Now, that was a horrible offensive line. I watched the Bucks with Anthony Collins. That was a horrible offensive line. I saw the last 2 years of your buddy Jeremy Trueblood. Nice guy, but his last 2 years, turnstile. That was a bad offensive line. I did not see that. Now, again, I always bring this up. Were they the 76 Raiders? No way. Were they horrible? I just didn't see that. Now, here's what Scott Kaxmir, and me, if I believed it, no one would shut me up about it. You know me. That's why I'm still bellyaching about Michael Bennett how many years later. And by the way, Jason Light, if Michael Bennett gets on the free agent market, you better be prepared. Every freaking day I'm going to have a Michael Bennett story. Anyway, and aside from that, with Doug Martin, Scott Kaxmir, Football Outsiders, did the digging. No running back had worse back-to-back seasons for yards per carry since 1940. Ira, you were what, in high school then? 1940.
I pride myself on original research, Steve, but that might set the new stand.
All right, Ira, as far as Dotson with the running
game.
That's
before Light picked up his first free agent, 1940. that's way back there.
So All right, so Dotson's going to look at all those. He says Warhop's going to hand out all of those running plays.
Talking about only run blocking.
Yeah, force the guys to watch him and really dig deep on every single run play. Hopefully Warhop passes out brown bags with each for that afternoon, and no fried foods to keep things down. But seriously, Dotson, I think,
I don't think he would talk like that about pass protection. I think he felt pass protection was adequate.
Yeah, he
and got data to back it up.
He said that it was a strength of his, and he felt better about that, and understandably so. Certainly, pass blocking was not the Bucs' problem last year.
There's a road grader that's at least one that's going to be available in the draft, Steve. He's going to be off the board in the top 10 picks. He's a road grader.
All right, we'll get to that. But
in college against children.
Dotson also had you like the fact that he said that Jameis Winston has an extreme level of authenticity and that he's lost no credibility with Dotson or anybody that Dotson can tell. You like that, Ira. That gets to you.
I did, because he made the broader point, Lee, when I poked him a little bit, and I said, and I do believe this, NFL players in particular, and I think professional athletes in general, they got good BS detectors.
Yeah.
They do. And some guy comes in, throws his weight around, I'm a leader, blah, blah, blah. If you're not a true leader, they see through you in a New York minute. Mm-hmm. And Dotson admitted as such and said he has seen through people that's come through one Buck place every year, basically, whether it's a rookie or a free agent. And he basically, Steve, I think he said to himself or he said to a teammate, that guy's not going to make it. I mean, like after day one, he's not going to make it.
Wow.
Because of the way they carry themselves. When he talks about Winston, Lee, and I always bring up the point of Winston's rookie year when people used to ask me, hey, do you believe in Winston? He looks like a phony. And I'd say, I look at the way he has affected Logan Mankins and Vincent Jackson.
You took the words out of my mouth. Exactly.
Those are the guys. Logan Mankins.
Grizzled veterans.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not his effect on Ali Marpet. Ali Marpet's a rookie in 2015. You know, Logan Mankins seen it all.
If only people could have seen your facial reaction and you throwing your arms up there. Marpet's a rookie.
You know, Vincent Jackson, 10 years in the league, played in big games.
Yeah.
And when you ask those guys about Jameis Winston as a rookie, and nothing's changed in the intervening 2 years, it's the work that he puts in, Steve. It's the work that he puts in. Dotson called him the best leader he's ever been around.
Wow.
Now, this is his 10th year in the league. Mm-hmm. Best leader he's ever been around. He also said a few things about Josh Freeman, Steve. I'll let you talk about that a little bit, but I think he wishes nothing but the best for Josh Freeman. But he admitted that Freeman was led astray. And he didn't say this, but you really boil it down. In some ways, Winston is the anti-Freeman in terms of his love for the game. Steve, and it's going to be a big critical difference going forward. Why Winston, I think, is going to make it big, and Freeman's trying out in the CFL.
I'll let everybody go back and listen to the Mark Dotson interview on iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, wherever they want to listen.
He couldn't talk enough about Winston, Steve.
They're planning to say the Freeman stuff. Yeah, he basically just said that he believes off the field. Off the field issues led Freeman astray or off the path, whatever you want to call it.
And Dotson was on the team in 2010. He wasn't playing. He wasn't a starter, but he was on the team. Mm-hmm. And he saw games that Freeman pulled out of his butt.
He saw it all. Rookie class with Josh Freeman. So, I mean, we watched him from day one and evolve and all that stuff. So.
Here's one for you, Ira, about the BS meter players have. What do you hear coaches say all the time? You have to be yourself, because if you're not in a heartbeat, players will figure out your
phone. And Cutter gets high grades on that too, Lee.
Yeah.
For being honest.
Mm-hmm.
Cutter doesn't tell people what they want to hear only. So you got to give that up for Cutter. We've had a lot of players have said that about Cutter.
Yeah.
In describing why they think it was a good move to bring him back.
You know, Dotson talked about when I think I – did I ask him something about – or I can't remember who asked him. I want to say I did about, why did you guys play so well in December against
I believe that
folks?
Was your question.
And he basically said Cutter. That was one of
his words. Yeah, that's what he said. That's right.
Because they knew Cutter's job was on the line.
You know, the authenticity of Cutter, it's very interesting to look at because, Ira, you mentioned this in previous columns of yours. Hey, look, Cutter was telling everybody it's not the running, it's not the offensive line. He was telling everybody that the last year.
Well, he didn't know who to blame. He didn't want to blame anybody.
He's like, it's not the old line in the running game, and then he's telling us
it's not Doug Martin.
It's not Doug Martin. It's not Gale Sayers that we don't have. It's, he's all over the place. And the blame game—that's
in public. That's his public.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's not with the players behind the scenes.
That's in public, but still, if you look at behind the scenes, what we can say out of public, right? Though at least what we know is going on behind the scenes. Behind the scenes, he wasn't blaming Doug Martin because he was still putting the guy in the game.
Clearly.
So if he was blaming the offensive line, that's what it more appeared to be, right? Because he couldn't even figure out who was better at left guard.
Thank you.
Which Dotson said
after week one.
Which Dotson said was a mess and a screwy situation. And I don't know. But we'll see if we get some clarity from Cutter this week. Probably not. And we're going to move on.
If you're Dirk Cutter and you're having private meetings during the season, and Jason Light's office is right next to yours, and you're in there with Spy Tech and whoever else is in there, and Munkin or whatever.
Not that I'm mocking Spy Tech, but I always think of Skynet when I hear his name.
Lee, if you're Cutter, are you mincing any words? Are you watching your words with Jason Light? Or are you saying, this offensive line's not getting the job done? I don't see any reason why Cutter wouldn't be brutally honest.
Thank you. I was going to say you have to say what you think because, you know, if you lose next year, I don't think it's within anyone's doubt that it might be Cutter's last year. So what do you got to lose? You better, you know, now's the time to start kicking people in the rear end. I'm going to bring something back to you. You're talking about leaders and Freeman and Winston. I mean, it's a great sports radio topic, but I always quote Jack Ham. It's rhetoric. It's rhetoric, which means empty words. But Pat Kerwin, former Buck Scout, I know you're close to Pat Kerwin, Sirius NFL Radio, used to be a Jets pro player personnel guy, used to be a Jets linebacker coach with your beloved Monty Kiffin.
He's always got one ear out for the Bucks. He always wants to know what's going on with the Bucks.
Oh, yeah, because there's some pride there. He used to be part of this organization. And he was talking about leadership the other day, and he doesn't think Jameis is a leader. He thinks he's a phony. Kerwin said, you can't import leaders. When you're talking about Dotson, guys come into the locker room and they try to strut their stuff and it's baloney. Kerwin said, you can't import leaders. I tried that with Ronnie Lott. It didn't work. Like, whoa, that's interesting.
So Ronnie Lott in his second stint after starring for the 49ers, he joined the Jets.
Yeah,
I believe.
And did he wind up with the Raiders at the last year?
I believe he did end up with the Raiders. Yeah, I think he did.
I was thinking the Jets was his third team. I could be wrong, but he said, I tried to import a leader. His name was Ronnie Lott. It didn't work.
I think, Steve, the best formula, your leaders emerge from your core players that have been through the system. So guys like Mike Evans, Winston, Marpet, Smith, Quan Alexander's already there.
Yeah.
Let's admit it. And let's face it, part of the problem over the years is the Bucks haven't had a lot of guys to sign to second contracts. It's been a big problem around here.
Yeah.
And the Glazers have said repeatedly to me, Lee, and maybe even to you guys at NFL meetings, we don't mind one bit spending money for guys that are worth second contracts. That means you're doing it right.
Well,
and I think that's one thing that Light has done. We got to give that into the Light Plus column.
He's got a bunch of guys that deserve second contracts. Now, of course, the haters start screaming ASJ. You know, the draft is not perfect. Not even Bill Polian batted 1,000. I'm on your reaction to this, Ira. You know, I brought up Pat Kerwin. He brought up something very interesting. I take as much blame as anybody, and I'll be the first one to admit it. I was wrong when Cutter was kvetching and griping about bad practices back in the summer in training camp. That should have been a red flag. I just blew it off. That's just Cutter being Cutter. Kerwin, him and Jim Miller, his co-host, they do their training camp tour, and they were spending an entire day embedded with the Bucks. Kerwin swears that he saw way too many Bucks players hammering it up for the cameras, Hard Knocks cameras. He was really turned off by that.
All right, I'm gonna lay a little nugget on our listeners, Steven. It's time.
Drop a nugget, Ira.
I'm dropping it. This isn't as good as something in 1940, Lee, but I'm dropping it. Now that Chucky has moved on, he's not going to be here. He's going to be in Oakland. 2 nights before Chucky's Ring of Honor ceremony, which makes it a Saturday night in Tampa, they had a little shindig for him at Hooters in Tampa, and I was invited.
And you should have been.
My wife and I went, and Chucky showed up.
Guest of honor.
Early. Bob Lamont, that very influential agent, he was walking around.
Florio's friend.
Old Bucks, former Bucks were there. Sapp showed up. Well, anyway, here's your little nugget, Steve. It's a pretty good one. I got Gruden aside, just talking a little bit. Maybe he had made up his mind at that point that he was going to the Raiders. Maybe he hadn't, because the season was still going on. But I asked him, hey, did you go out to Buck practice this week? He goes, yes, I did. Preparing for Monday night's game. How was it? Awful. Practice habits, terrible. ball on the ground all the time. He was appalled. Gruden was appalled at the Bucs practice. Maybe more than one. Might have been multiple practices. Take that. That was during the five-game losing streak, which ended, I guess, the last week of the year against New Orleans. The Bucs were still playing hard, but they were sloppy. They were sloppy, and it took Gruden about 90 seconds to realize just how sloppy they were. He was not impressed, Steve. Was that a factor in him ultimately joining the Raiders? No. There was 100 million factors for him joining the Raiders. But Steve,
what a gem of a nugget there. I can't wait to write that up.
He was absolutely unimpressed with the Buck practice. Absolutely unimpressed.
So when Cutter was whining and kvetching in the summer, we should have
took more notice of that because, Steve, he said it consistently.
Yeah. It was once or twice, yeah.
He said it consistently. I wasn't happy with this practice.
Yeah, you know what?
We sloughed it off.
I can't go there.
Of
because,
course not. How are you going to agree with me, DeKemper?
It's not a bad.
Oh, you got under his skin for a change, Ira.
It's still practice. It's still training camp practice. And the same way, if they're lighting it up in training camp practice, big freaking deal. Teams have lost all four preseason games and gone out and played well. It's still practice. Now, I get patterns and stuff, but they came out and they were ready on opening day after a challenging situation. They were a 2-1 football team. They should have beaten the Patriots with a field goal kicker. I can't go to August practices as a problem.
Did they really impress you against the Bears? I was not offensively.
Yeah, they did.
Well, they played well, and the Bears were terrible.
Yeah, the Bears were terrible. The Bucs played okay. During that Bears game, in the back of my mind, this offense is not humming. It's not clicking.
They got up to a big lead, and they played conservative.
Because of turnovers.
I don't know why. Yeah, turnovers. You have to ask Cutter.
Defense looked
great.
How
many turnovers the Bears have in the first half?
The Bears were terrible.
But bad practice habits is about defense and offense and special teams. It's not just the offense. So, I mean, I'm just saying that I can't blame August when they
then he went to Minnesota and got the living hell kicked out of him physically.
Yeah. Well, not now your bad practices are extending into late into the season. So that is a problem.
Oh, the December thing, it's a huge nugget. I just don't think that we all blew it by saying, you know, that, hey, some August bad practices were a problem.
I raise my hand and say I blew it.
I don't think you blew it. That's what I'm saying. I don't think you blew it. All right, Ira, a couple things that one ties to dots and one's tied to something Lee said. Pat Kerwin, he's fantastic analyst. He keeps a bit on the Bucs because he lives in Naples.
Yes, he does.
He does a sports radio thing down in
Naples. He's also tight with Groot.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think he is.
Interesting. He's
tight with Bruce Allen.
He does a sports radio thing down in Naples, Fort Myers, and usually they throw him some Bucs questions for the interest down there. So
that's the high rent district down there in Naples, Stevie.
Yeah, that's where he is. You know, but Calais Campbell, the Jaguars brought him in as a leader, as that type. They paid him as such, and it worked wonders. Everybody said he named him captain. Everybody said that
he made everybody around him better.
Very influential. So I guess you can do it. It's just so hard
to
buy a leader.
Because those guys aren't available in free agency. They're not available.
No one's answered this. I would love to find out. And everybody, and rightly so, I think, everybody goes after Light for not signing Campbell. Did Campbell want to come here? I don't know that. Now, when Cutter came out and said, we didn't have $17 million, that's nonsense. Absolute nonsense.
Why wouldn't you want to play next to Gerald McCoy? Why wouldn't you?
It's hard to believe if they had to put the most money on the table, it's hard to believe that he wouldn't have been interested.
Yeah.
Coming off 9-7.
And the Bucs were a better team than the Jacks.
Coming off 9-7, and he can play next to a Pro Bowler.
But I have no idea. No one's ever said, again, free agency is not the draft. You can't put a gun to guys that you sign. Just the times I've talked to Light about the few times about free agents, I never got the impression, he could have been, I don't know. He never gave me the impression that him and Calais Campbell's agent had any serious discussions. I didn't get that impression. That's not to me. It didn't happen, but I never got the impression that Campbell wanted to come here. Now, is that the Bucs playing CYA? Could be. I just don't know.
We'll never know because I think it's just fair to assume the Bucs didn't say, Calais, we want to make you the best offer you can find. I don't think that ever happened.
I can't imagine Light not touching base with Calais Campbell's agent. Like, you interested? If so, let's talk. I mean, that would be the height of irresponsibility if he didn't do that.
Yeah,
I don't know. It even clouds it a little bit now with Brenson Buckner in here because he's close with Light, and Campbell went on record saying Buckner was advising him on teams and coaches and through the free agency process, and Buckner was still employed by Arizona, which obviously so it was interesting.
Lee, you were there with me for Buckner. He has the look of a guy who knows who the real players are in this league.
Yeah, because
and the Bucs would be foolish not to give him input.
Oh, cool. Yeah, of course. Now, with Buckner, it sounds great, looks great, Hollywood perfect.
Got a resume?
You name it. You know, what they call it, casting perfect? There's a term I can't think of. I swear sometimes I think I'm autistic. I can't think of things quick enough. I know what I want to say, but I can't say it. At any rate, casting call, casting perfect, whatever. Anyway, you can't get blood out of a turnip. And he could do all the right things. He could be the greatest defensive line coach in the world. And if you got Will Golston, and you're hoping he gets 7 sacks, good flipping luck.
That's the bigger point, Steve. You can't stop with Brenson Buckner. That can only be the start.
I may have mentioned this in a previous podcast before, but in Indianapolis, last year at the Combine, St. Elmo. I'm walking through St. Elmo, and we're at the top floor where the lounge is, and more importantly, the cocktail. It looked like Hooters girls, only with red cocktail dresses, which is impressive. There's Steve Keim, general manager of the Cardinals, and Bruce Arians. And Keim recognizes him. Hey! And he waved me over to have a drink with him. He introduces me to Arians, who was cool as could be. Great guy. And we're talking for a while, and then I hit Steve Keim with this question, because I know him and Light are like best of friends. Square in the face with this question. So is Jason Light going to get Campbell? And it was like someone hit him with a cattle prod. He jumped, and he's like, I don't know.
You know, it begs the question. What if Brenson Buckner had been hired a year ago?
It wasn't available, Aaron.
Yeah, wasn't available.
wasn't available.
Maybe you could have pried him out. But if he was here, would that have influenced Cam?
Yeah, it wasn't going to be.
You never know.
Never forget the Keim act like he saw a ghost. Like, I don't know.
All right, Ira, so free agency, right? So the Campbell reminiscing, the Campbell angst.
Those days are gone.
Now free agency is here. And we've touched on it a bit, but one guy we wanted to talk about today, I know you did, Andrew Norwell. It looks like the Panthers are going to let go of the left guard, let him walk in free agency, because they just paid their right guard a fortune. Your old pal Marty Herney paid him a fortune last year. So most teams aren't going to pay massive amounts of money to guards like that. So if Norwell, who's supposed to be an excellent player, young, tough guy, up the ranks, I think he was undrafted, if he's the good attitude guy, and I read a thing about Greg Olsen saying that he was, Norwell defines what the Panthers are all about. So you said that. It was quite an explanation he gave. Anyway, is this a guy the Bucs go after in free agency after we hear Dotson talk about the flip-flop of Smith and Pamphil really messing up the left side of the line and the continuity? Do you think they do that? Or, you know, like you mentioned before, a lot of fans are very high on the guard out of Notre Dame with the possible 7th pick in the draft.
The one thing we know for certain, they need a left guard. They need a left guard that they can depend on.
Yeah.
Pamphil's not under contract. I don't believe Evan Smith's under contract, Steve. They need help. Now, Lee, let me put it this way. If this guy Norwell is really worth all these plaudits that he's getting, led by Pro Football Focus.
Oh.
Led by Pro Football Focus, which tabs him as the number one guard in the National Football League in the 2017 season. Number one. Forget about, DeCastro and all these other Pro Bowlers. This guy's number one. And if he's the character guy that Greg Olsen says, the pulse of the team, the face of the team, why is he available? Why is he available? And why did the Panthers deem him replaceable?
Well, maybe they have someone as a backup that's pretty good. You know, why was Calais Campbell available? Why will Trumaine Johnson be available? Salary caps.
Salary cap, and in the case of Campbell, maybe age. Maybe age.
No, that's part of it, yeah.
Norwell's not 31, is he, Steve? I don't believe.
He's like 26 years old, but they've paid too much money. Trey Turner, pro bowler, got his money. They got the Khalil brothers, got big money. You can't pay an O-line everybody. And the Panthers are good. Therefore, they have a lot of big contracts. Bucks aren't good. Therefore, they have $75 million under the cap.
Well, I'll say this. If Norwell's the real deal, Lee, and the Bucks manage to land him, that solves a big problem. And it takes away something you might have to address in the draft, and maybe you can move on from Quentin Nelson if you can get Norwell. There's ramifications to it.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. Number one, you're touting him as Pro Football Focus. I don't put any stock in what those clowns.
That's why I
mean, I'll go to freaking Tires Plus and talk to the guy who changes my tires.
Oh.
I mean, he know much. He didn't watch as much film.
Now, these guys are horrible. Those guys came after me a couple weeks ago. Now they're going to come after you, DeKemper.
I don't care. They've come after me before. I don't give a damn. Now, if it was Football Outsiders, that's a different story. But Pro Football Focus, a couple years ago, Bucks signed this cat by the name of Anthony Collins. Oh, my gosh, what a steal the Buccaneers got. Oh, he's so spare me with their offensive line rate. Their offensive line ratings are complete.
If I'm the Bucks, I'm certainly not taking Pro Football Focus into any consideration.
No,
zero.
I were a couple years ago.
I'm looking at every snap of the Carolina Panthers. I'm making my own evaluations. That's what you do.
Yeah, the Panthers have a good offensive line, so that I take a lot more stock in that. I'll give you a little – I'm going to drop another nugget on you, but I can't tell who it is because it wasn't said with any expectation of publication. Having a beer with the NFL general manager a couple years ago, and he was talking to me about Pro Football Focus and what a joke they are, and he was talking about offensive line grades, and he was so animated about how horrible they were, he almost fell backwards in his chair, like, you know, throwing his arms up there. Oh my God, you ought to have seen this. I'm not going to go any farther than that. Sorry.
Steve.
But the Quentin Nelson you bring up. I know certain people, they can't walk around in public without a towel around their pants because they're so infatuated with Quentin Nelson. I'll just say this. And this is a pet peeve of yours, what I'm going to bring up. This will get you riled up. If somehow Le'Veon Bell gets loose and the Bucs sign him, I'm throwing all of my chips in the middle of the table for this Nelson. Then I'm saying, you go get him then. If you get Le'Veon Bell, damn right you go and draft this Nelson. But the Bucs probably, 98% chance, won't get Le'Veon Bell. So I'm okay with getting a free agent or maybe drafting someone third round. The Bucs don't have a hole at defensive end. They've got a crater. The Bucs don't have a hole at running back. They've got a crater. And we're talking craters that Neil Armstrong never saw before. That's how big they
One
are.
One thing I'm not doing up is trade. I'm not trading up from 7 to get Quentin Nelson. I'm not doing that, Steve. That I think would be nutso. You know, the guy would have to be John Hanna.
You know, I always love that analogy, John Hanna.
Or Will Shields. I mean, somebody along those lines. Potential Hall of Fame player, especially for a guard. You know, Polian says you don't do it for a guard. You don't do it.
Well, the Norwell thing's interesting because if you sign him, then you put your own offensive line situation in peril for the next year when you got to sign Smith and Marpet, and then you have to make smart decisions with the other guys. You know, and we don't really know what this team thinks of Beninock, and if he can move to guard. And right, who knows what they really know here, what they believe. But
the upside is that the offensive line could be a strength, Steve. We haven't talked that way about the Bucs in a long time.
Yeah, you've said it yourself. Look, if you own the offensive line, you dictate the game, and wouldn't that be a nice change?
No kidding.
And you can also get away with lesser running back. I'm still in the camp of fix running back in free agency. They can do this. They can fix it. But
it's not an either-or situation. It doesn't have to be.
Can I hit you with a riddle, Ira?
You take a running back and you ignore the offensive line. It doesn't have to be that way.
Can I hit you with a riddle, Ira? See what you think about this. I've written this once before. I'm going to start harping on it more. I think Steve is sort of in the same boat I am, but I want Steve's input with this as well. It's pretty darn clear the Bucs are not going to get Chubb, barring a miracle, barring five teams trading up for a quarterback. Chubb's not going to be there. And this bothers Steve a little bit because I always say this. Rarely do rookie defensive ends make an impact. And the Bucs need a defensive end in the worst way. Well, since it's pretty clear, and there's nobody in free agency unless you talk about Adrian Claiborne, give me a break. There's no one available. So unless Light's going to pull off a trade, they're not going to get any immediate help on the defensive line. It's going to be over a year before that gets fixed, and this coaching staff may not be here. And it's given that information that it's unlikely the Bucs are going to get an 8-sack guy, a 10-sack guy, 12-sack guy. Go get a freaking running back. Go get a running back in free agency, in the draft, with a running game. Not only do you make your offense better, you play keep away. That rotten pass rush is off the field. You don't have to worry about that as much. It's still a worry. It's still a concern. It's not as big a concern because theoretically, if you got a good running game to go with this passing game, which was the offense itself was number 9 in the NFL, with no running game, the offense is number 9 last year. With a running game, you should be able to play keep away and keep that rotten pass defense off the field.
And, Steve, we saw what Cutter did with the offense in 2015 when he was coordinator with a running game. They were outstanding. Highest-ranked offense that the Bucs have ever had in a history that goes back more than 40 years. So, you know, that balance is critical for success for Cutter.
Well, there's a lot of ways to look at it. But personally, see, I don't care about Light's success or Cutter's success as it relates to job security.
You're looking wins.
I care about the team, right? And you're talking about balance. This team is imbalanced in its drafting defensively. They're way behind. And if Light drafts two defensive ends and they each get 5 sacks next year and they're okay and they're developing, it'll be a little bit of an improvement, but it helps the team long term immensely if these guys need 2-3 years to develop. But he's got good young talent. So I care about the team. They're not winning the Super Bowl next year. I'm sorry. I hate to say it, but barring one of the greatest miracles in the history of sports, they're not winning the Super Bowl.
Like the Rams.
So I don't care about Light's job or Cutter's job. I care about doing what's best for the team, building a Super Bowl winner. So I'd like to see them draft on defense. And if they've got a defensive tackle and a defensive lineman that they can go 1-2, bring them on.
And, Steve, I'm going to hold down DeKemper. I got to grab him around the neck here because he's ready to get up. But, Lee, it goes directly to your point, what Steve's talking about. You draft talented, rookies. You have to develop them. Now,
you've
made a huge point about corner, but you could also make the same point along the defensive line.
Sort of.
Maybe Buckner can help in that regard in terms of development.
And that's not light, by the way. That's an organizational thing. That's been going on for over a decade.
Draft and develop. Well, sometimes they've drafted, but they haven't developed.
DeQuan Bowers.
It's a big problem. It's a big problem.
Who was that guy from USC? Sackless, Kyle Moore?
Kyle Moore, yeah. It's interesting because, look, we all know that there's going to be one defensive end taken in free agency this year, even though the names aren't pretty on paper. One of them, probably two, is going to have a good year in 2018. That's just the odds. And it needs to be for the Bucs.
Julius
Pick
Peppers.
The right guy. I don't care if it's whoever it is, wherever he's floating around, some 4-sack guy who's available. Pick the right guy. The Bucs have to be the team that, wow, hey, they squeeze 8.5 sacks out of this guy. That's got to be the Bucs.
I know people, I've written this before, the Bucs are nuts if they don't throw money at Julius Peppers. I'm like, oh, he wants to stay in Carolina. Yeah, this is his last contract. Zero's talk. And they're like, oh, he's old. So? 11 freaking sacks last year. You cut that in half, he still leads the Bucs in sacks. Come on, people.
And I believe Buckner has a little history with Mr. Peppers. Just a little.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. All right, a little rapid fire for you, Sage.
Rapid fire.
Jermaine Johnson, cornerback of the Rams, never made a Pro Bowl, but an excellent cornerback nonetheless. And it's pretty clear he's going to be free because they don't want to pay him again. And 28 years old, you sign him or not?
I want Johnson, Lee, and I want him even if Grimes comes back. I still want Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Can't have enough corners right now. In my mind, the Bucs have one corner. Can't have enough.
They have none.
Well, you're right. I was counting Grimes coming back.
Yeah, you can't bank on that.
Yeah.
And I'm like you. Of course I want Grimes back. No question. But it's unknown whether he comes back. That spooked me a little bit when he confessed that he was thinking about retirement last year while he was under contract. And he's not under contract anymore. So that spooks me. So, I'd love to have Grimes back, but right now he's not there.
Lee, I'll take it a step further. I want Grimes. I want Johnson. And I'm drafting a cornerback.
Ooh.
Not in the first round, but I'm drafting a cornerback in the top 3 or 4 picks.
All right, Sage, a little more rapid fire.
You know why? Because in the old days, the glory days, when the Bucs had some depth, rookies didn't have to play right away. They could learn behind guys.
What?
Rondé Barber didn't play his first year. He didn't play much.
It's a good thing. He was bad early on.
Brian Kelly, but when these guys were ready?
They're ready.
They're ready.
Didn't Dungy have a theory that you always draft a cornerback no less than a second day in?
I think that's right.
All right, Sage, Chris.
Especially in this division.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right now, yeah.
Go ahead, Sage.
Chris Ivory cut loose. Jacksonville, I think he made a few plays in the playoffs and did some things. Running back,
what's the playoffs?
Running back help. You like him or not?
I'm going to pass on Chris Ivory. Age a factor, wear and tear. Jags lost a little faith in him. Yeldon took his spot as the backup to Fournette. I'm not sure he's any better than Peyton Barber. I'm not sure. Seems to
Fair.
Be the same type. Get you 4 yards. Get you what's there.
Obviously, Barber's
I'm looking for a back with a little shimmy to him.
Obviously,
a guy who can break off a 20-yard run. I'm not sure that's Ivory.
That's a good point. And of course, Peyton Barber would be a whole lot cheaper than Ivory.
Yes.
Ira, real quick. DeMarco Murray, guy in a similar boat to Doug Martin, older, off year. Interested in him?
No, because Lee, he started off with the Cowboys, arguably the best offensive line in football. Then he went to Tennessee. They've got two tremendous offensive tackles in Tennessee, which they used big resources to get.
Yes.
And by that, I mean first-round draft picks.
Yes.
And they're good.
Yes.
Bucks don't have that.
I always liked Taylor Lewan. I always liked him.
Taylor
had
Lewan.
A nasty edge to him.
And they got Conklin, I believe, is their other tackle, and he's very good. Bucks don't have it. DeMarco Murray comes to the Bucks. You're looking at 3.7 yards a carry.
Now that's good.
Yeah, that is an upgrade with the Bucks.
Isn't that shameful?
As Lee mentioned earlier, he referenced the need for Bucks fans when they think about Quentin Nelson to wear a towel in public to stay covered. If the Bucks sign Carlos Hyde, I'm going to be that guy because they just need a good, darn, powerful, consistent, durable running back. And if they can solve that problem with
Hyde.
That's
not a bad one, Steve. That's not a bad one.
I'm going to ask Steve DeLabry here.
Let me just say, Roger Craig came out and said the Niners need to re-sign this guy. We've already got Tim Ryan, who's on their radio network, said, I like him, although I think Hyde wants to test the market. And I forget the other name of an ex-quarterback up there who said, Hyde, you know, let him play with a good team for once.
Garcia? What you think?
No, it wasn't Garcia.
Lee, wouldn't you think the 49ers at this point would want to surround Garoppolo with some players?
Yeah, you know, and they've got money to spend. So, well, there again, you know, he's not signed. So until he's signed,
I got no problem with picking up Carlos Hyde, though, Steve.
I got to ask Steve to elaborate about this because I had thought this, and Steve said, no, you're wrong. And someone just over the weekend had this comment and it said, trust me, I know this. He's on my fantasy football team. So I want Steve to elaborate. I used to follow the Niners a little bit last couple of years since they were so horrible. I really haven't until Garoppolo came. I have a little interest in Garoppolo. First couple of years, was he not hurt all the time, Carlos Hyde?
Well, I didn't say you were wrong on him being hurt. You said he's always hurt. And the last 2 years, he hasn't been hurt at all.
Last 2 years, he hasn't been.
Last 2 years.
First couple years, he was, wasn't he?
I don't know. But last 2 years, he's
been. Because there was a guy in comment, he's like, trust me, he's always hurt. He's on my fantasy team.
Yeah, the last 2 years, he's been healthy. Two years. So to me, 2 years, you're good 2 years.
I'm going to one up Steve. Not only would I like to see Carlos Hyde here, they still need to draft a guy. Get two guys in here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Get some talent in here. One thing I wrote, Ira, and I found this was interesting, and a lot of people glommed onto it. I guess you would call it original research, but it's just basic stuff. Dirk Koetter has never had a rookie running back that he's relied
on. That was great research.
In his career, ever. And when he got to Jacksonville, Maurice Jones-Drew was a second-year guy, and he ran with Fred Taylor instead of Jones-Drew, even though Jones-Drew had a better rookie year than Taylor had.
That was a good tandem.
And so great tandem, and then he got to rely on Drew, who was the ultimate guy. Who if he lasted longer, he'd be a Hall of Fame candidate at least. And then he went to Atlanta, no rookie there, and then no rookie, and then he gets Devontae Freeman on his roster and doesn't use him. And then they use him the next year, and he runs wild, and no rookie here with the Bucks. He lobbied for Doug Martin. Doug Martin's our guy. We're lovey. Stick with this guy. I see stuff out of him, and he's just never had a rookie running back, and I don't know if he has the trust there. Do you think there's anything to that, or is just bad luck by Koetter, not having a rookie around?
I think it's mostly coincidence. Lee, if the Bucks draft a rookie running back, and I'm not talking about taking a guy in the sixth round like they did like they did last year, and the guy had a cup of coffee and
Snoop.
He was gone. Yeah, Snoop. Lee, if they draft a guy and the guy's got the goods, Koetter will play.
Better put him on a few. Koetter
will
better.
Play him.
You know, that's great research by Steve. And
you talk about a player going into a contract year. Koetter's going into a contract year.
Yeah,
that's the way.
The whole organization is.
Whole organization.
Steve, not only was it great research, I think Steve's onto something because I remember when the Falcons were on Hard Knocks, Freeman was a rookie, and I remember Koetter griping about how Freeman.
Devontae Freeman.
Yeah. I was thinking of the guy from the Houston Texans. Anyway, I remember Koetter griping about how he wasn't good at pass pro. Okay, I get that, fine. But you know what?
That was the knock on Peyton Barber.
Well, yeah. Let me get to this. And this you're building me up here. Remember when all hell broke loose with Bucks fans that Mark Domenech basically signed his letter of resignation when Michael Clayton put his John Hancock on a piece of paper, and Dominic's days were basically over. In the eyes of fans, they went bananas, and Dominic's big reason for re-signing him to an idiotic contract, by the way. Re-signing him is one thing. What he paid was idiotic. He can block. I'm sorry. A running back's biggest responsibility is freaking running the ball. Blocking is secondary.
Same thing with a receiver.
If you want a running back to block, go get a stinking fullback from Fordham or something. You know, here was a guy, Freeman, and I go round and round with Jason Light about this. I like college football. I'll spend all day watching college football. And at that time, Florida State was very good. They were on TV all the time. They're running the pro-style offense, not a freaking gimmick zone spread, whatever the hell they call those things. He's in a pro offense. He's catching the ball. He's running the ball. He does everything you want. I'm like, man, this guy's a stud. He lasted to the fourth round, and then Koetter's whining, oh, you can't block. Well, okay. You didn't draft in the block. You drafted him in run and catch. Come on. And I understand there's value in a guy pass pro. I get that because you have so much invested in your quarterback. But you didn't draft him to block. You draft if you just want to block or put a freaking guard back there.
You do a scout report on a cornerback coming out of college, cornerback. If the first thing you say about the guy is that he's a willing tackler, he's out. I don't want him. Now, that could be the fourth thing you say about him, and it adds value. It adds value. But it can't be the first for a cornerback. You got to cover.
Deion Sanders didn't like
to
tackle.
You got to cover. So that's the least point, you know. All right, the guy's not an accomplished blocker. We all understand that. Don't ask him to do something he's not good at.
Bingo.
Play to
Bill
his
Belichick.
Strengths, Steve. Play to his strength.
All right, Sage.
Just like we play to your strengths on this podcast.
Yeah, so
we're still trying to find them out, but we play to them.
Yeah, that's why it's an hour already. We can't find them. All right, Ira, as we wind down, couple of quick things. First, remind everybody, leave a comment. If you made it this long, you certainly have a comment or two to give. Leave a comment at Podbean, iTunes, wherever. Subscribe. Free alert. Lets you know when the podcast is.
Word's getting around about this podcast, Steve. Word's getting around.
Words all around.
Words all around.
All,
yeah,
around,
it's there.
All around the streets, even the Nile River. Next thing you know. And last one I wanted to ask you, Ira, because this might really extract some sage wisdom, some sage thoughts. It'll soothe fans on both sides of the Buccaneers aisle. Gerald McCoy turned 30 the other day. 30 years old.
Happy birthday.
Happy
93.
Birthday, Gerald. But what does this mean? What does this mean now for the Bucs and Bucs fans and the state of McCoy and what's left of his career in the 8 years he's put in? You know, 30 years old, defensive lineman, don't last that long, Ira. Where are we?
I think we're at the point where we need to appreciate what we got. We got a very good defensive tackle. No, he's not Warren Sapp. And no, he's not Aaron Donald. He's not.
No.
He's not.
Even though Donald studies him.
But he's one of the better players on this team. One of the better players
in the league.
One of the better players on this team.
Well, I say the league. He's one of the best defensive tackles
in
the league.
Yeah, at his position. Yeah, yeah. But you're right. And, you know, I always think the same way about him as I do with DeMar Dotson. Been in this league a long time and really hasn't had a chance to strut his stuff on a postseason stage. That's where people get to know you. That's where people know your name. The postseason. Mm-hmm. The postseason.
That's where you make your mark.
And, you know, these guys got to be hungry beyond belief. Dotson talked about it, how his career would be tarnished. I think it would be tarnished if you don't play in a postseason game.
Yeah.
It's not all your fault. You're only one guy.
Sure.
But for all you McCoy bashers out there, you're not going to get any ammunition from me. He's the least of the Buck problems. Stop knocking him for what he's not and start recognizing him for what he is.
You know, McCoy's turning 30. Sort of what you're thinking. You know, obviously, I think the world will be
quiet. And you're turning 30 next month, DeKemper.
I wish.
You know, it's a big milestone.
I wish. I'm one of those ages where you keep saying you're 39, you know. With McCoy, you know, obviously, I think the world of him. I think he's a hell of a player. I don't give a damn if he likes Batman. I don't give a damn if he helps people up. He gets results. And people, what do you mean results? He gets results. Whenever I think of McCoy turning 30, I just think, what an absolute and utter disgrace this organization has done to him. They've never gotten him any help. They can't develop a defensive end to save their lives. I mean, you're talking one of the most shameful periods of the Buccaneers' history. This organization, it's not a Jason Light thing. It goes all the way back to Bruce Almighty. This organization has just urinated in the wind trying to get any kind of pass rush outside of McCoy.
Wait a minute. They got Daquan Bowers. They would have beaten their chest over Bowers.
Utter,
it's a
and,
steal.
Utter and total disgrace and a cherry on top of all that is when they had a guy who looked like he was going to be something, they got rid of him, Michael Bennett. I mean, I blame everybody. I blame the scouting department. I blame player personnel. I blame all three GMs.
How about Andre, the security man? You want to blame him too?
Yeah, he should have had some common sense and took the keys away.
When I was 30, I left the bosom of the Big Apple, and I came to Tampa Bay, and I came to live in a swinging singles place in Largo, even though I was married.
Right after Nixon was elected.
And I come and I start, and I'm still working for UPI. I got a
transfer. I think you're still saying you're still going to singles places in Largo.
And start covering events in the Tampa Bay area, golf tournaments and this and that, college football, the USFL was still going.
Were they?
Basketball,
really?
Yeah. And the next thing I know, I got Lehman Bennett in town, and thank you, Lehman Bennett, for two straight 2-14 seasons. It was a beautiful welcome.
What are these
Tampa
swinging singles places in Largo you speak
Ira,
of?
Ira, the heck with the box, the heck with
it
that.
It was called Chaparral.
What's going on in Largo?
I remember that place.
What's going on in Largo?
What happened? How do you know this was a swinging singles
Because every night of the week, and I mean on a
you
Tuesday
had a blonde
night.
On your arm?
Yeah, two in the morning around the pool. all kinds of carrying on. And where's my duplex bedroom window overlooking the pool? Tuesday night, 2:15 in the morning, and I got to go call the cops.
And where are your binoculars?
Oh,
where
I got to put down the binoculars, and I got to go call the cops.
So what'd they do?
He's a party pooper.
Man's got to sleep.
What were they breaking up? Well, first of all,
I was pissed I wasn't invited. That got me all mad. Cops would come, and you know, an hour later, they're back at it. They're back at it. You know, the pipe's out. The beers are out. Who knows what else is off. And I got a bird's eye view from my window. That's why I didn't get any sleep, gentlemen. And I'm still trying to make up
for it. And that's why you have gray hair.
You're a sick man, Sage.
Get out of here, Sage.
All right, get out of here.